please.
My name is Gadi Evron. I work in security.
Okay, my name is Gadi Evron. I work in security, mostly global level incident response for the sake of the internet itself. I'm currently employed by Afilias, although I was requested that we shouldn't take credit for that as Afilias because I did not work for Afilias at the time when I did this. So as far as the room is concerned, I am a private citizen of Israel, not representing Israel as well, giving you a lecture about Estonia. I used to be the Chief Information Security Officer for the Israeli government internet operation, and then the search manager. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gadi. Olga?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Olga Cavalli. I come from Argentina. I am a university teacher, and I also am an advisor to the government of Argentina. I advise the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I represented Argentina in the second phase of the World Summit of Information Society in Tunis, and since then, I have been representing my country in all the meetings related with internet governance and information society. I have been the GAC representative of Argentina in ICANN, and I have been recently appointed to the GNSO Council. I started my work there 2 or 3 weeks ago. That's all for now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Olga.
Hi. Okay, it's working now. My name is Christine Hopers. I work at CertBR. Currently, I'm managing the team. I work with security for 11 years now, and I work at CertBR for 8 years. Mainly, I do instant response, instant handling. We do a lot of training, and my background is more of internet administration, so I work with that since 92 when the internet came into Brazil, so it's very practical, my background, and I think this is much about it.
Okay, thank you so much, Christine. As I mentioned earlier, we will kindly ask the panelists to briefly explain, 1 minute maximum, what are the main issues that you are going to tackle in your presentations today so that the audience knows exactly what are we going to talk about during this session. Gadi?
Do you want the only 1 minute?
1 minute each.
So you should start over there.
Okay.
Okay. My presentation, as we are talking about challenges and best practices, I would like to talk about one of the biggest challenges that we have in Brazil today, that is phishing and fraud attacking the end users. And what I would like to share with you are the best practices we came up as a community and all the cooperation that we managed to achieve in the country trying to fight this kind of threat in Brazil.
Okay, thank you, Christine. Olga?
My presentation will give you at first an overview of the Argentina IT and internet market, and then I would like to tell you about, in relation with best practices and security, the activities run by the local CERT, which name is ARCERT. I don't work with in the ARCERT, but I am very close to them because we run some activities together. In my case, representing Argentina, but every time I have to talk about security, I go to them, and they are my reference in the country. And they also have a leader position in the region for other countries that don't have a CERT in the region.
Thank you, Olga. Gadi?
Thank you very much. So I should just start my talk and explain early just what I'm going to talk about, right?
Yes.
Great. Good morning. Ooh. Okay. Good morning, everybody. As I said, my name is Gadi. We'll get to that in a second. I usually give, when I give a talk about this subject, I do so for about 70 minutes, which is very tiring for me. So doing so within the limit of about 15 minutes is going to be challenging. So I'm going to speak very, very quickly with the not very clear accent because I'm from Israel. And basically, we're going to try and look at what happened in Estonia, because information is kind of scarce and we mostly gather it from the press. And then we're going to look a little bit about lessons learned. And is this not, why is it, or is it not the first internet war? This brief is technical, it's operational, and it's very short, relatively. At this point, I would like to mention again, because it's important for the last time for this session, although I'm an Israeli citizen, I do not represent Israel. Israel does not have representation at the second IGF, which I myself don't like. And although I work with Ophelias, again, this work was done before I started with them, so I don't represent them for the purpose of this session either. Let's get started.
Okay, Gadi, just
yes.
Before you start, I just want to remind the audience that any comments, any questions, please write them down so that we manage to discuss them both during the 5 minutes as well as to pick them and to reply later to any comments and questions you might have. So feel free to note down.
Okay. No, I'm good. So the first important note, and I'll tell you the story about how I got to Estonia in a second. All credit belongs to them. The Estonians responded, the Estonians did the entire handling of the incident, and all the blame naturally goes to me, but honestly, they do deserve the credit. I'm just relaying some of the information from what happened there. And at this point, I should also mention that this information is based on the post-mortem analysis and recommendations that I wrote for the Estonian CERT, not necessarily what they believe or think, and we're still in debate about some of our disagreements. So, I don't know how many of you read the Dilbert's blog, or techies, but the first time I heard about Estonia, I said Elbonia, which is a very small country in the Dilbert blog that is arbitrarily used whenever somebody is speaking about outsourcing or some sort of abroad issue. So it's a small third world country in Eastern Europe or something like that. Its main export is mud. Its main underground export is babies with beards, or at least pictures of babies with beards, because then they can do scams with them. So the first time, I knew Hilar, the Estonian CERT manager, from my work in the global incident response community. And when the incident in Estonia started happening and we read about them in the press, I said, okay, I used to work in the Israeli ISP. I know how these things happen. Attacks happen all the time. There are some political tensions here and there. That makes sense. And 2 weeks pass and this thing is still going on and the press is still talking about it. Quite a high period of shelf life. So I emailed Hilar and say, Hilar, what's going on? Do you guys need any help? And he said, when do I pick you up from the airport? So at this point, they became scared. I mean, I live in Israel. I live in the West Bank. And I was scared going to Estonia because I couldn't take a gun. So, the unknown. But more, let's get a little bit more serious now. Estonia is a small country, as we know, with Eastern Europe. They have 1.3 or so million people living there. They're in the northmost of the three Baltic states. They're pretty much Nordic. They have a flat tax, which I find very interesting. They have no tax on beer or alcohol in general, which I found very, very interesting. And a lot of blonde girls walk in the streets, which I also found very interesting. And getting even more serious, why did this happen to Estonia and why it's so important? So after the fall of the Soviet Union, Estonia had to build its infrastructure from scratch. They didn't have anything there. So they used the most advanced technology of the time, which was the internet. And ever since then, they kept advancing that technology up to some of what we can read here. 99%, which sometimes people quote 98%, 95% changes, acceptance of online banking or e-banking. They have ID cards, it's PKI chips, they're all past that peak. Because they have PKI chips for each of their citizens, they actually held the last elections from home. Actually, the last two elections and parliamentary elections, there are 30,000 voters that voted from home. And getting a little bit down to earth and speaking about daily life, this happens sometimes, but in Estonia, they actually check their grammar school kids' website every evening to get notes from the teacher and know what books they need to send for tomorrow. Really an online society, and in my opinion, in their online capability, services-wise, content-wise, they're more advanced than even what we used to do and others used to do around the world, most Western countries, to be honest. So here we only have just first item of the timeline of the attacks, because we honestly don't have too much time to discuss it in length. The 26th of...
Volume.
Okay, that will work. So, yeah, I'll say next slide. Thank you very much. So, oh, nothing is in my eyes. That's unbelievable. Okay, much more comfortable. So the 26th of April comes. I'm going to skip the general history of what happened in Estonia because of time constraints, but let's just say there were some political instabilities and people didn't like what was going on. Some statue was removed. The Russians took it very, very personally. Not Russia as in Russians, Russian people took it very personally because they really liked their 20 or 30 million dead in the World War II. And the Estonians took it very personally because they were under Russian occupation for many, many years. Let's stop there. So the attacks start 26th of April. Next slide, please. And the traffic increases 100 to 1,000 times from normality. And I'm going to really start going fast here. Now, 100 to 1,000 times of normality is not really a very accurate estimate, is it? So how can we give it? The reason is people were so busy with internet response, and to be honest, they didn't really think about collecting data, which in hindsight may be a mistake, but I would do it again. But it really emphasizes what they dealt with. Next slide, thank you. So this cartoon is taken from an Estonian newspaper that I don't currently have the URL for, so if you want the slides, I can't give it to you because I don't have copyright. And that's what the blogosphere looked like. The blogosphere, of course, means in this case forums, blogs, in the Russian language, right? And the entire Russian language blogosphere basically came alive. People posted instructions, very, very simple instructions. I'm using the term people for now. People posted very simple instructions on how you could get back at the Estonians for what they did. The instructions were sent not necessarily to security or computer forums, technical forums, but rather to current events, science fiction forums, etc. The population really got fired up. Can you please move another slide? Thank you. So this is one example of a very simple command. They will tell people they can get back at the Estonians, they can blah, 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 blah. And it's very simple. Click on your start menu, click on run, type in this command, click enter. Type up, click enter. Type up, click enter in a level that your grandma would understand or your small 7-year-old daughter would understand. And because it was that easy, a lot of people did it. A lot of people responded in the forums. It really created what you may call a fire. They fired up. Let's move a slide. And then things got a little bit more complicated. Some people automated this. This is a very basic script to automate the attacks. Still, just to run the computer, very simple. Let's move another slide. Next slide. Thank you. And this is, again, people get fired up. They start doing things. We can't know if it's all connected. This is DDoS attacker that was built specifically for Estonia. I'm not sure exactly how useful this particular attacker was, but, you know, another tool. Next slide. So the size of the attacks. We all care about that. What actually happened? So let's be honest. Compared with some of the attacks we have seen in the world, Blue Security, the root servers, etc., this wasn't anything special. Honestly, I could give you more details about what actually consisted, what traffic went on, but it wasn't that special. But then, it's still pretty sizable. It's not a small attack either. And then, it was just right for Estonia. Their uplink, their capacity, their routing system, it was just right. And more than that, even if it was just one stray packet in the wild, one email, whatever it is that may have caused this attack, the impact on the Estonian infrastructure was critical. So it doesn't matter. So the scale is what was impressive. All these ping commands, all these people from all around getting very, very excited. And once this happened, once the blogosphere got fired up, other people got involved. If a spammer or a botnet controller or somebody else looks at all this and says, I don't need to write ping, I know what to do. I'm an expert in these things, let me use my botnet, let me use my army, and they start attacking Estonia that way. The population attacked here. They caused some sort of effect that just didn't stop. Some sort of snowball. And from this point on, I'm gonna really run fast, so please excuse me. Next slide. So there were a few attacks of interest. One of them was a spam, an email attack, against the Estonian parliament. Now consider, an online society, the Estonian parliament email. I can tell you in Israel, I don't think many of the Knesset members actually use their email, but in Estonia, it's critical. Luckily, it So the IMU system of the Estonian parliament, in my opinion, will become critical infrastructure. But that put aside, it was during the weekend. So they got it up before the Monday. It was all good. There were some routers that crashed. One of them was misconfigured. One of them just couldn't handle the traffic. Next slide. But there were other attacks as well. We spoke about botnets. So this over here is one of the botnet attacks. And right here, we see what we can only explain, although again, it's an educated guess looking at botnet attacks from the past several years, that this is casing us. These small peaks right here are basically testing our capacity. We couldn't really gather information about them. They were so high. And then, about this usually happens between 1 hour and 3 weeks after that. Here it was less than that, of course. The actual attack starts exactly what is needed to take you down. Next slide. So regular botnet attacks without and within, we don't have time to talk about it, but let's say when the botnet attacks from outside Estonia, no bots from within Estonia, which is very interesting, think military strategy, stop working, they move to attack from within Estonia using compromised computers there. Next slide. So there was a comment made on some blog, one of these blogs, by somebody saying, you know, I have a PayPal account, I want to start a fund to hire a botnet to attack Estonia. Somebody replied and said, it's okay, I'll give you two for free. Next slide. So, special botnets. One of the botnets used was specially created for Estonia. A botnet was in place, a new sample, a new virus was dropped on each of these machines. There was no propagation, no new spread of the virus, and immediately after that, this botnet that had no command and control, it could not be tracked, just started attacking hard-coded targets. Next slide. So, incident response. Usual incident response, we don't have time to talk about it, but it couldn't cope with what we needed to do. Please, next slide. So the main goal changed. They only wanted to get things back online in Estonia. They didn't care about anything else. It's basic incident response. But they started trying to identify the target of the attacks. Next slide, please. Rather than what the sources are. Too much going on. They wanted the impact. If server goes down, let's worry about that. We're in emergency mode. We're not in routine. Next slide, please. So they're in 5 minutes. Okay, they're in a unique situation. Again, very small country. They can get people to do things very quickly. That's great. Next slide, please. And the CERT. The CERT, although semi-official, is not in a capacity to give orders. It was there. It started responding to the incident. The first incidents were against the Estonian government. So it was very simple for them to continue responding later on when the BACs got involved. And without them coordinating the incident, nothing would have happened. If I have to choose one lesson learned from the entire Estonian incident, is bad things happen to all of us. That's a given. How we respond is how we are judged. An incident response saved Estonia. Technical incident response. Next slide. So there are some certs outside of Estonia that helped. Because the internet is global. This is the second biggest lesson. The internet is global. We cannot do it on our own. So while the CERT took care of things inside Estonia, they sent complaints to the rest of the world about attacking IP addresses, sources, etc., to these certs, and they escalated it later to the Internet Security Operations Community, which I'm a member of, and things going from there. Next slide. So, of course, the more technological a country is, the more vulnerable it is. Estonia is pretty much on the internet. They're very vulnerable. Next slide. They have, for example, we talk about the banks, right? E-banking for them means they have not been to a real bank in 10 years. They're online. So what's going on there? If a bank goes down, they can't buy milk, they can't buy gas, they can't buy bread. This is critical infrastructure. The business infrastructure was far more important in this case than any other, such as air traffic control, SCADA systems. That's another lesson. Next slide. So progress is good, we should always continue, but what of resilience? What of fallback? They didn't have any in this case. Next slide. So business sector, ISPs, media websites, news. Next slide. And more importantly, and we don't even know how to start considering this, critical infrastructure as the personal computer. Consider attacks from without, attacks from within. How do we handle that? Next slide. So was this an ad hoc loose coupling of basically people getting organized? Was this an organized attack? Was it a blogosphere meme, an epidemic spreading everywhere like we've seen before? Was it something else? The internet is perfect for plausible deniability. In information warfare, you may know who your enemies are and who your rivals are, but know who is actually attacking you. Next slide. So several indications suggest this was organized, period. This was planned. On what level? We don't know. Ad hoc loose coupling of people, somebody behind it, we don't know, but we can guess. So organized botnets. It started virtually at the same time as the riots in the streets of Tallinn, right? Specially crafted botnet. Let's move on. We don't have time to go over this. Next slide. So was it Russians? Absolutely yes. It was people on the Russian language blogosphere, whether in Russia or otherwise, were people who attacked. Was it Russia? Opinion, no. But the other opinion could also be gathered. We don't know. Technical information can be falsified, and gathering it is difficult. We don't know. Next slide.
1 minute.
1 minute. So next slide. We don't have time to talk about strategy. Next slide. This was a riot, basically. This was an internet war, but it was a riot online. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Clausewitz, we don't have time for military strategy. Next slide. Next slide. Okay. So Estonia is a culture of full disclosure. They believe in letting things be known first, and then let's try and make them secret if we need to, which is weird. But it also gives us an amazing case study. We can learn about information warfare. We can learn about what they use to respond. We can learn about strategy, whether it's policing with the broken windows theory to Clausewitz. Really good stuff. I really enjoy learning about it. Next slide. Now, the reason this is the first internet war is one, political awareness. Things happen all the time. Cyber terrorism, if you would like to call it other things, political awareness is what made this attack special. And honestly, we today cannot even deal with cybercrime, which is the infrastructure many of these people use to attack. So I hope we'll be able to deal with these things again when they happen again, because they will happen. And personally, on a personal note, again, the one thing I find interesting, if we are to ignore everything else, is the fact of how this attack was initiated, the blogosphere. Consider online mob control using blogs. Psychological warfare put on the offensive. Next slide. That's Hilar, the Estonian cert manager. That's me, and that's Ivor over there. I'm sorry we didn't have time to go more into details. I want to give you a general feeling of what happened there and some of the lessons learned in a story form. Thank you very much for listening to me, and you can email me if you need any details, or Robert will be happy to help. Thank you very much.
Based on the presentation made. So the floor is open for any comments, any questions. Before you address the question, kindly introduce yourself and try to be as brief as possible. Thank you.
Any questions from the audience at all? Any additional information you may want to know? Some of the slides that may have gone too quickly?
Good morning, I'm Sharan Ahmad from South Africa, and I'm from Diplo Foundation as well. Gadi, thank you for the presentation. My question is extremely simple. What would happen if tomorrow the exact attacks happened exactly as they did against Estonia today? What's actually changed in terms of governmental response, incidents response, and technology infrastructure? What would be different if the exact same thing happened right now?
I can speak of my recommendations of some of the conversations we have had. I have had with the Estonians and with people around the world. But honestly, this is a technical presentation. As you can obviously see, I'm not a politician. And even though the question is very benign, I would be far from... It's not safe for me to try and answer something like that because I'll get in trouble. Not because I'm not allowed to say anything, but because I will say something offensive when I'm not supposed to. Let's stay away from politics. I'm sorry. In this particular case. As technical infrastructure changed, I can say that yes. Yes is a safe answer.
Okay, thank you. We have 3 more minutes for any other questions and comments from the floor. Please feel free to address. Okay, if not, please, those of you who still have comments and you hesitate to address them now, feel free to write them down and approach later on. We will now move on with the second presentation. Christine, the floor is yours.
Hello. As I said before, I'll be presenting a little bit about financial fraud in Brazil. I will not be presenting about losses or about exactly how many people have been victims, but I will be talking about the challenges in the technical part and how we are trying to deal with that before someone becomes a victim. So this is really what we are doing in Brazil, is trying to prevent people from falling for phishing or something like that. But before I go to specifically that, I would like to say a little bit more about some other things. So Robert was asking me to give a best practice case. And then I said, yeah, we do a lot of things. I said, oh, financial fraud would be good, but we do a lot of best practice in Brazil. We do a lot for information security. CertBR was created in 97, so we have been in Brazil for 10 years now. And our main goal started as instant handling. That would be coordination, help to recover, maintain statistics about the attacks in Brazil, how many attempts, and what are the kinds of the threats. Then we moved to a part of training and awareness. Today we give courses to instant handlers, and we produce material for awareness, and we produce a lot of... Okay, a change of mic again. Okay. Thank you. And then we also have something that is as important as doing instant handling and doing awareness, as with this environment we have today, you need to have what people, some people call network monitoring, situational awareness, but actually you need to do some trend analysis. You need to have some way to measure what's out there, what's going on in your network. So we have a lot of work with honeypots and trend analysis, doing spam, and we have some international partnership and corporations that help us to bring to Brazil the information that people in other countries are getting, and to get to Brazil also what are other experiences. But CertBR is not an organization in itself. We are part of the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee. And as probably you have seen in some other panels today, so the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee is a multi-stakeholder organization with government, civil society, and we are part of that organization. So we do our day-to-day work based on strategies set by the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee and on feedback given by the public. So we are taking into account all the sectors in Brazil. But moving more for, before I give some of the best practices and cooperation we are doing in the country, I will show just what the situation is. So what I'm talking when I talk about financial fraud in Brazil. And as Brazil has a pretty advanced financial system, and most of the people that use internet Brazil are potential internet bank online users. So there is a lot of people trying to get people deceived or try to lure them into getting into attacks. So I'll show briefly an evolution of that, how it's different from some other countries, what we are doing in cooperation and in user awareness. So basically, we have been seeing that since 2001. It all started with some pretty silly brute force attacks against net banking websites. So they would be there, they would try to discover the bank account and will be trying to get into. Then in 2002, 2003, they moved to the traditional phishing, and they started to do what in 2005 started to be called as farming. But in 2003, we had a lot of people actually compromising DNS servers from ISPs, from big networks, and trying to make that server to point the user for another machine. So it's a technical way for deceiving people into going to another site, not the actual bank site. In 2003 and 2004, we start seeing more sophistication phishing, and the farming actually, when the system administrators became more savvy, it was difficult to compromise DNS servers, so they went to compromising the user machine. So it's much easier to go into the machine, alter the host file, that's the file that maintains all the information about DNS, and saying, you know, your bank page is now that other page. But then you have the whole people in the financial sector, they started doing some countermeasures, monitoring, and alerting people not to do that. So we moved to what is today being done since 2005. It's pretty much the same trend. What people are doing in the internet is not different from the old days, when they would approach you in the street and try to sell you something, try to convince you that they have won the lottery, but they cannot cash the money, so they would try to sell you something, or when they were trying to do any other lure. But now they can send spam doing that, they can do that through the internet, and they can reach people that they would not reach in the street. But pretty much it's not different from the old day attacks that people would go to places and try to lure someone into giving money or giving some information or something like that. So what we see today is that spam is for some years now not at all related to the financial institutions. You would not see spam saying that, you know, here's your bank, please give your information to us. You see spam saying that, you know, this is a picture from news, this is some humor page, come here to see the latest photographs or of a famous actress, or see here your document or ID for the country was being canceled, so go to that page. So they try to lure the people, and they're not thinking about financial fraud in that time. And this has been on since 2005, so at the end, the awareness of the user is really the point, because they're actually trying to get to the people that are not aware on how people would do that technically, and they're really trying to reach the user. So that's the challenge. They're not targeting the financial sector systems, but the users of the financial sector. So they're going to the user that is not really savvy about what's going on. We are starting to see some of more new techniques here, but they're not pretty common. So that was happened like once, twice, and it's not being pretty much used at what people call drive-by downloads, that you compromise a high-profile website and try to put something malicious there. Could be a script, could be an iframe, could be something. Wow. Okay. I don't know. Okay, back to normal. So, but this really happened once, and I think one of the difficulties is that they are not really being able to go to the high-profile websites. So as they compromise some websites that are not really visited a lot, it's not much, there's not much revenue in that. These are some numbers we are dealing. These are some Trojans that are reported to CertPR by people in general, by users. These are not at all people that are being victim, but they're people that have noticed, you know, I received this, and this probably is a fraud or something that, you know, I shouldn't be doing that. So they report to us. We have some sister administrators that follow to us, users of them that have found fraud. So we can see there's a lot of, so these Trojans and malicious code I'm talking here, they are not at all bots or worms or general spyware. I'm talking about keyloggers, screen loggers, and Trojan downloaders. So this is the category that I'm here. And one of the points that's very important, we were talking about these days about international cooperation. One of the problems we have, okay, if the Trojan is up, you need to take it down. But then you have 74 countries where we have Trojans on in 2006, and then 76 in 2007 since until October. So it's a lot of work into contacting all those countries and certs in those countries and saying, you know, you have a Trojan there, you have a compromised website, and this is the worst. Most of the times that we have is a website that had any problem or any vulnerability, someone compromised and put a Trojan there. So you need not only to take it down, but to educate the administrator that, you know, you have a problem, you need to fix that, and you're being abused by someone. So this is really one of the challenges. And the number of emails we sent trying to notify people were 18,000 last year and 14,000 just trying to notify people that were hosting Trojans related to Brazilian fraud. So it's a lot of coordination. We leverage a lot into the cooperation of other national certs and certs from other countries. But they also have a lot of problems how to educate that people, to reach them, to explain that that file that's not always an executable, sometimes is a JPEG, HTML, and said, you know, that actually is something that is not supposed to be there. So that's a challenge too, so how to educate. And we do the same in the other way. So we have phishing pages and sometimes Trojans hosted in Brazil. So we try to help other certs to take that down here in our country. So it's a two-way cooperation effort. And this is just for you to have an idea. One of the things that we need to do is not that we are working with AV, but today, at least if you, every one of you received a book that was the ICT numbers in Brazil that was in your material. If you go there was a security session, and if you see, practically most of the users, they only have antivirus as their defense in their home. So the only way that we can reach to the user and say, you know, you are not being, try to defend them from these Trojans is try to get
the most number of antivirus possible to receive these new Trojans that are not yet recognized by anyone. So this is a kind of a graph with a number that we have per month. So here's a month, an average of 1,000 new Trojans that were not detected by anyone. So this is one of the points. We are notifying 35 AV companies today, so free software, any software, doesn't matter. We just want that to reach the user. And here's like the efficiency, and that's another point. Only in the average, the two best AVs, they get like 80% of the Trojans that we receive in any given moment. So we have a big window of vulnerability there that you need to reach in some way. So our focus in this work is really try to notify the sites, most in other countries, as I said, send the undetected Trojans to AV companies or other companies that would do something about it. We're also working with some people that are doing like those bars and browsers to do some blacklistings or something like that. But the problem is we need to be very careful because most of those sites, they are not the criminals, they're just victims as well. So we need to be careful to not to blacklist legitimate sites, sometimes government sites of other countries that we have been seeing involved in this. And the user awareness is part of some of the things that we got the feeling is that some users, they were being scared and doing things online because they didn't understand what was going on. It was not exactly that they were afraid and that they knew exactly what was going on, but the press was talking about. So the press is talking about fraud and phishing and so many things, and then they, oh my God, I'll not do anything online again. So one of the ideas of the awareness is to say, you know, the problem is this, your risk is this, and then you choose if you would like to really go there and to see. And there are some people that we talk face to face that when we explain that, they said, oh, okay, now I understand better, know more or less. And especially give them the opportunity to know if they have been infected, compromised, or victim. Then they can go quickly there to see for help. So this is one of the points of this. And we have been having for some years now regular meetings with the financial sector, ISPs, other networks involved to share information and to discuss what are the threats, what are the measures to take the threat, and some strategies or what they want or what they think would be good user awareness for that. So just to do that, we have since 2000 some, it's a book that is from Security Best Practices. That is more of a reference book. We have some law schools that are using that as a reference for security. It's really 100 pages, but it's kind of a simple language to the end user. The idea is really to anyone that's not from security to see, to understand. And then we had another phase together with the anti-spam task force in Brazil to have a more palatable material, something more easier for to the user to understand with some pictures. You all received some stickers in your material that are part of this approach to get the young people, because sometimes the children just get downloading everything and clicking everything and executing everything in the same machine that their parents do online banking or something else. So try to make them understand what it is, what exactly is this fraud through internet that people are talking about. It's not that someone is doing something else. Explain what it is. And the next phase, it's being released this week, that the latest videos here that we have. We have people from Uruguay translating the book to Spanish, so we hope that in some months now we will have it all in Spanish too for the Spanish-speaking community. And the videos, the first and the second, the first one, as we need, we have really a lot of people to include in the internet. It explains a little bit the history of the internet, how it all started with the ARPANET, everything else, and then we explain that we can do a lot of things, but as you need to be careful in the street, you need to be careful in the internet. So this is the message. Then we have the second one that explained the invaders to the people. So what exactly are these bots, spyware, Trojan, whatever that people are talking in the press, that they read in the paper. So what exactly is this? Try to explain that what it is, how it gets into your computer. The third one talks a lot about spam. And we saw that most institutions, they were not afraid to do anti-spam campaigns, but they were kind of afraid to do security campaigns. So if you can put the security message into anti-spam, that's something that everybody wants to fight, that was a good thing too, because most of the threats, at least for the financial sector, are coming through spam. So, and the fourth one is the defense. So that really
has a lot to do with behavior. For you to take care, for you to pay attention if you have been infected or not, try not to click on things. That would not be 100%, but if you can cover like 80 or 90% of the threats, that would be better than nothing. There are several DVDs with these videos in some rooms here in the event. I left some DVDs here in the table if people at the end would like to get the videos too, and they have like subtitles in English. But basically this was some of the best practices. This was really focused to user awareness and fraud in Brazil, but we do some other work too. Yeah, this is the DVD that is on the table. So, but there are DVDs on the, I think, Internet Point or some other tables or someone. If you'd like some more, you can talk to me out later.
Okay, thank you, Christine. I think you really deserve warm applause for the presentation. Okay, and questions? Okay, good. I'll start from here.
Thank you. I'm Monica and came from Argentina. And my question is, the CERT has reporting and awareness activities only, or also include interaction with the enforcement agency or something like that, and how it works, and if you have some legislation supporting all this activity?
As we are talking about fraud, this is crime by itself. So we are having a lot of arrests, and there was no need to new legislation to actually get the people involved in that, because there's a lot of already legislation saying that you cannot take advantage of other people or get financial advantage with other people. So last week we had our last arrest of people involved in this kind of crime. So it's really, the police is really into that. We don't do investigation in CertBR. We are a neutral party. We have given training to some law enforcement about how to collect evidence or how to work with computers, but we don't involve into investigation. So we have this line separate law enforcement, but we provide information about technical things, or sometimes they have difficulty with a new technology or to understand something. We did some workshops, we did some lectures with especially the forensic experts into the police and federal police, local police. So it's not really investigation, but for this kind of crime, it's, you don't need a new legislation to put that in.
And Olga, there's also a question online that's being posed by the streaming. The question is, can you estimate the damage from attacks for Brazil in a year? For instance, in 2006, do we have an estimate in terms of the financial consequences?
CertBR doesn't have, but the Brazilian Bank Federation, they have an official estimate that was 300 million reals, and for the currency exchange now, that would be $150 million or something. So it's like half of the Brazilian, but that is the Brazilian Bank Federation has the official numbers. So we don't have actually victims, because what we say to people is that if you are a victim of a debt, or if you think that you have been a victim, go to your institution or online shopping or bank and to the police to register on the crime. So they don't come. Usually they come to us. They come to us when they have a problem. And when they have to us that they have been a victim, we redirect them to the police and to the institution. So,
Olga, you have a question as well?
You hear me? No. Yes, now yes. Congratulate you for your excellent presentation. And I would like to know how the different, I see that you have a general cert and then you have some other, it's more specialized. How do you coordinate in between them?
Yeah, in Brazil we have today almost 30 C-certs in the country. The coordination is not, with our experience, you saw that doesn't have like a formal framework was better for a corporation than having a specifically formal thing, because people would be, oh my God, I need to be formal, what I should share or not, what I should do or not. But we cooperate a lot, we participate in events, with specific incidents, we get together with the C-certs that are involved, but we know each other, we have been in meetings a lot. So usually when you have something happening in that, as we deliver courses in Brazil in instant handling, most of the CSERTs have already taken our courses, so there are 3 courses, 1 week each, so there's a lot of interaction there too. So one of the ideas, these courses, they are in a cost recovery basis. The idea is not to have profit from the courses, but actually to give training to people in an affordable manner. So the idea is really to get people together, and in these weeks that they spend with us and they spend with themselves, they really, a lot of projects and corporations, they have been born into that those weeks where we put people together to talk about incidents and something like that.
You want to take maybe 2 questions, actually 3. Any questions from the audience? If we look online, someone was raising their hand, and I think Gadi has a question as well. So Ginger, I believe your avatar had a question.
Hello? Yes. That is me sitting there online, raising my hand. And just coincidentally, I gave Alfonso Avila's paper at the GigaNet presentation as his flesh and blood avatar. And I'm asking a question in, he gave his paper and he gave the conclusion that e-banking protections are not justified in the social and economic costs in developing countries because the threat is not significant enough to justify the cost, for instance, of one-time passwords and other things that act almost as barriers to e-banking. Rather, he feels that educational systems like, and you seem to talk almost exclusively about prevention and education. Would you agree, or can you, do you know, is this just the emphasis of your talk today, or do you agree that these kinds of protections will be detrimental to e-banking in developing countries?
Well, I cannot actually talk about that, but what my emphasis today was in the best practices we are developing. There are some banks in Brazil that they are starting to use that, but even countries that are developed countries that are using one-time passwords or two-factor authentication, depending on the implementation you choose, that's defeated as well. So one of the things that we are talking and we are trying to say that really try to learn from other problems with other countries, depending on how to implement that, you can have Trojans that defeat those kind of technologies. But one of the things that we hear, and it's not only for, I can speak only for the Brazilian banks, but that we hear in UK, we go to the APEX, that's the UK Federation Banks meetings, that really is a big cost. And depending on how you implement it, you can still have fraud being committed through those technologies. So this is, we're just looking at the technical side, but really the costs are high. They're higher than the other ones. But in Brazil, they're coming with some, like the bingo cards or some 10 passwords or something that some other countries are also doing. So that is being implemented in Brazil, has reduced fraud. But then if you move to something more, then you need really to pay attention on the implementation, how you use it for session, transaction, how that's being defeated in some other cases. So it's not a silver bullet as well. So it doesn't matter what you do.
Okay, thank you. And Gadi, the last question.
Thank you. My question is about Brazil, but just a quick, I just wanted to point the reason most banks are afraid of this or are afraid of implementing anti-phishing measurements is because the web channel is very important. It's very cheap. People don't have to go to branches. And once you risk losing the trust in the web channel by the user, you lose money. And from Israel, I've seen it all over the world, in Sweden, everywhere we went, people believe they're safe from phishing, but the risk analysis they should have done is not local to their banks, what have we suffered last year, but rather what other banks all over the world suffered and how soon does it transfer to other countries. Just a quick note. My question is, I'm heavily involved in phishing response, but what we have seen around the world and I've actually never had the chance to ask so far is the Spanish and Portuguese phishing, which is very, very different than phishing around the world and mostly emanates from your own country, and I only can imagine what you have to deal with every day. Did you guys, I mean, you spoke about this a little bit earlier, did you have any successes that you can pinpoint to in prosecuting these people to try and change the economics and lower their risk-cost benefit?
Well, I've not been involved a lot into the rest. What we see is more from what we talk to the guys with the police and what goes to the media, but we have at least 3-4 arrests per year with like 100 people arrested. But then I think this is more of a problem, I think, with in Brazil, they stay like 3-4 years in jail, then they go out again, and then they start again. So that would be true for any country. So it's something that, one thing that happened also is that you have so many fishing kits that people that are not tax savvy, they are actually preferring to move to other, to online. So this is something that we feel, because it's really easy to find the tools, it's really easy to buy the tools in any place. You can go to YouTube and have a tutorial on how to do fraud. So that is really some of the points that make more people doing that, and not necessarily having that huge profit, but doing a little bit. There's some people that have been arrested that the only thing that they were doing were paying the bills or something like that. So,
and really quickly, you mentioned Apex in the UK, and you mentioned cooperation here. The UK is unique in the fact that it's one of the only countries in the world where the banks fully cooperate and actually do not compete on security, but share all their information among themselves anyway. In Brazil, we mentioned some cooperation. Do the banks here compete on security, or do they actually cooperate on this?
No, there's a lot of cooperation. We have those meetings with us too, so that they talk to each other. They don't actually like. I think in the Netherlands it's still even more, because they use, all the banks use the same technology, the same website. I think it's more united. So what I do is they share experiences and they talk. That was a very, very slow process. I don't know how deep that cooperation is, but they talk with us and they talk with the ISPs to do that.
Okay, thank you, Christine. I'm sure there are many other questions. Please keep them for the end of this workshop. We'll have 5 minutes at the end to approach them. Olga, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Veronica. I will do my best after these two excellent presentations. It won't be easy. What I would like to do after starting is that I will, as I told you before, I will give you some figures about my country, about ICTs and internet in my country. And I will also present as a best practice case the local CERT in Argentina, which is run by the government. It's totally governmental body. All the credits of the work, I don't work in the CERT. Many of you work in security, so perhaps you know them, Patricia, Rodolfo, and Gaston. They are very well known in Argentina and in all the region, and also internationally. So I would like you to know that all the credits for the CERTs go to them, and not to me, that I am only a media to give this information to you. So let's this make start. Okay. First, as I told you, I would like to introduce some information about my country. Perhaps some of you are from the region, but some of you don't. Argentina is a country that has around 40 million people, inhabitants, mostly concentrated in the middle of the country. Argentina is quite a long country, not a wide country, and it has a capital city of Buenos Aires that has around one-third of the whole population of the country. So we have a pretty concentrated population in Buenos Aires. Then we have like 5 cities with around 1 million people. So you can imagine, with 40 million inhabitants in such a big country, we have all the networks and all the accesses and all the threats concentrated in these places. And most of the country is with low population, and as the whole Latin America, we are a quite unequal continent. Our region is the most unequal in the whole world. It's many places with a lot of people, rich people, poor people all together, and then the rest of the country is quite empty. So as you can see in this picture, we have around 10 million fixed lines. They grew a lot after privatization in year 1991, in the 1990. We had privatization. We have a national teledensity of 24%, which is the average number for developing countries. And as I told you before, we have great asymmetry. So you can see in Buenos Aires and surrounding area, that we usually call AMBA, teledensity is 41%. And in one of the
northwest and in the north of the country, in Provincia de Formosa, we have 7%. Also in AMBA, we have several different figures. If you go to Microcentro, the center of the city and the north area, which is the richest, you may have 100% of teledensity on 100% of internet penetration. So I'm running out of electricity. So this is one of the major challenges for, Latin American countries. Mobile telephony is quite developed, especially driven by prepaid services and by calling party pay services. We have around 34 million mobiles with one of the highest penetrations in the whole region. It's 88%. As you can see, most of them are prepaid lines, which are the ones that give the less revenue to the companies, and then you have postpaid 9%. We have around, well, these figures may not be so interesting, but we have around 9% only internet penetration in the rest of the country. As you can see, mostly of the internet penetration is in big cities, especially in Buenos Aires and surrounding area, and main capital cities of the interior. So with this perspective, I would like to, these are figures for the whole Latin America. Argentina numbers may have risen a little bit because these numbers are from the end of, at the beginning of the year. Perhaps we are around the same number that Chile has. So we are leaders in the region in broadband access. But as you can see, we are far away from developing countries. What I would like you to notice is that in relation with security, all the networks are concentrated in big cities, and the international networks start in Buenos Aires and end there. And all the country contacts with the rest of the world through Buenos Aires. So why I would like to talk to you about the CERT is because I'm part of the coordinating committee we have in Argentina in relation with information society and internet governance. I work at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs as an advisor, so we have regular meetings with this intergovernmental committee where also the CERT is participating. That's why I would like to stress the good work they do. They are very small and very qualified team of people. So this is my best practices case that I brought to you. The local CERT is called ARCERT. At the end of the presentation, you have the web page. It was created in 1999. Here you have some references for the ones that are interested in regulations. And their fully commitment with security, it started in 2003. Their commitment is to understand, assist, and supervise in all aspects related with security and privacy of information in a digital media and electronic in the public sector of Argentina. The fact is that as they are the only CERT in the country, they really have a major role, not only for the public sector, but they also are permanently consulted by private companies, and they make reports and they make alerts for private companies. It is not their role, but they are reference in the country, and they are an interesting reference in the region. They were the first, and they are the only CERT in Argentina. They are the national focal point for security, information security in Argentina. And they also have a major role in promoting the creation of CERTs in other countries of the regions that they don't have. I know Brazil is a leader. They have really a major role in the region. You have a fantastic infrastructure related to CERTs, but there are some other countries in the regions that don't have that. And Argentina and the CERTs have a leading role in training other countries in the region. They have a large experience in interchanging information with other CERTs, and also they represent our country in all meetings in relation with security, like ITU and the Organization of American States. Well, this I think I already told you, but one of the major things that they do is capacity building. they do training in Argentina, and they do training in the whole region. And they are also member of LACNIC, and they are also members of FIRST, which is the what is an institution that gathers all the CERTs together in the world. They have promoted some interesting activities in Argentina that were pioneered in the region, like the first Latin American Technical Colloquium in 2004 that was organized in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in our house. And as I told you before, they have been active with some of the countries in the region in relation with security, like Chile, Bolivia, Panama, Peru, Venezuela. And also they have participated in all the ITU initiatives. They are related with all the national and state organizations, that's their main role, all the legislation bodies, policy and justice bodies also. But also, they are permanently related with chambers, with banks, with ISPs, with universities and teaching institutions. And they receive information from public sector, especially with incidents that have origin in Argentina. And they are noticed by state organizations, by banks, by ISPs, by companies, by individuals that they just think that there's a security problem, and they contact them directly. They are contacted by other CERTs of the world, and they have several tools in relation with analysis of different kind of informations that can be a threat. Some examples of what they have been working with is web-based institution, phishing. Well, I think this is quite simple after what we have heard from my colleagues. Malicious calls, botnets, denial of service attacks, and other different things. They have a major role in developing security public policy. So they are the ones to establish the rules for national information security. They have the role to protect national information systems and data, and they have to promote knowledge and capacity building in Argentina, and also they have a role for the region. That's all the information about ARCERT. As I told you before, I am not a part of ARCERT. I may answer some questions, but I would be pleased to if I cannot handle the question right now, I would be pleased to let them know, and I will send you the information by mail. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Olga. Robert?
First, if there's any questions for Olga from the audience.
Good morning. My name is Yaovi from Benin. ARCERT was established in 1999. If I understand, you are trying to, one of the objectives is to try to establish a national information security law. My question is to know if you have finished that step.
That's an excellent question. I have my friend Monica, maybe she can help me. I'm not a lawyer, I'm an engineer. Argentina has, well, there's some story in this question. In the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and with the Ministry of Justice, we had an initiative of preparing a project of a change in the, help me.
Código Penal?
Criminal Code.
Criminal Code. To change it in the way that it would incorporate some figures related with cybercrime. This was the base for the new project that has half media sanción de diputado.
Yes, it's under treatment of the parliament. They are divided into chambers. And okay.
So it has half of the parliament approval. Now we are working for it to be approved finally. So we should have, but it's not I don't know when it will happen. New changes in the criminal code, and in the near future.
Okay, thank you, Monica, as well. We have 5 more minutes for additional questions for the entire panel. So,
any questions?
I found Gadi's presentation extremely interesting, but I don't know enough about it to even form an intelligent question. Is there a more detailed report online or accessible somewhere, please?
Because of Estonia's culture, they agree to release my postmortem and recommendation analysis, but it is not yet public. The Black Hat presentation on this subject, which was 70 minutes long, is available, and I think the movie is as well, but I will really work hard within the next month or so to make the report available, not just for the technical details, but so for two reasons. One, the technical details so that people can gather their own conclusions, as well as the flow of the events, and second, the lessons learned and what this means and what it meant so that policymakers can rely on actual information from the field when they try and cope with this. So hopefully soon, that's the answer.
There's a question at the back.
Morning, everyone. My name is Tokwa Shuremi. I'm from Nigeria. I'm just curious. I'm going to ask a general question. As we speak, before the last political dispensation changed in Nigeria, we had a bill before the National Assembly to pass a law to update all our criminal code laws to cover cybersecurity. Now, I'm just curious. Is it important that you have those kind of laws in place first before you can establish a set? For the past 18 months, I think, we've been trying to establish a couple of sets in various industries across the country. And I'm just wondering, within this room here, is it critical that you first of all have your laws in place before your sets are set up, or can your sets function effectively without the laws? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Christine?
Who starts? Who is first? Olga?
In the experience of Argentina, as I mentioned in my presentation, the local cert was established in 1999, and we still are trying to have a national law that it's in relation with information security. So that's my personal opinion, but maybe you can add more.
Well, CertPR was established in 1997. And as most of the crimes that are committed to the internet, they are not actually, most of them are not new crimes, they're just like crimes that would happen already in the society, then they move to the internet. In the Brazilian legislation, most of them you are already prosecuting and arresting. So the work of not only to have one or more national certs with national responsibility is to have the legislators and the prosecutors educated on understanding the specifics, to have people understanding how to gather evidence, how to preserve evidence, how to prove something. So we have been working a lot with training, but as we are just working with the technical and instant response and prevention, we don't actually, for our work on a daily basis, we don't need a law. We just need to be aware that we are not breaking the law while we are working. So, and we still have some projects and discussions about law, about spam, or law about some specific crimes that only happen in technology, but that doesn't prevent us from doing our work and handling incidents. So it's not really critical. And a cert could help people to understand better also and to make better laws. So in a way you can see that having a cert first is better to have better legislation in a sense.
My answer is a little bit different because first it depends. Now that I've been vague, I can actually give you the answer about what we did in Israel. First of all, you need to understand that it's, in my opinion, whatever you can get is good. If you can get a criminal law or law enforcement clued in, that's amazing. Don't count on it. So if you have the opportunity to establish a cert, I'll go for it. It's very critical to understand, though, that although these are criminals, we have for a very long time called them bad guys because there were no criminal repercussions. Certs are very, very important, world-facing, as well as within the country itself, to be able to respond to incidents. On the one hand, it's PR issues. People contact your country, they want to contact your country. You have had some issues with economically-wise with the Nigerian scams, right, 419 phishing, etc. And people really want to contact Nigeria rather than say, oh, these are Nigerians, they're not listening, just throwing it out of nowhere, right? So in Israel, The most important question for me when I want to establish a CERT is what it will actually do. And that comes down to the next question is, who are its clients? It may not in most cases be a business operation, but the clients may be ISPs. If it's ISPs, do they want to cooperate? Will they share information? Does this CERT have any reason to exist? So that's number one. Who are your clients and who will you be serving? And if you have any answer to that question, I would run with the CERT immediately. The second thing is, after the Estonian incident, honestly, if something bad happens in Nigeria, the CERT is the best option, be it civil, be it government, to try and approach the world and say, we need help, and have the correct routes in place so that you can get help and that you can mitigate attacks against you. So if I meant to make it into two issues, one, who are your clients? What do you want to do? Will you share information with the ISPs, share information with you? I don't know what the local situation is in Nigeria. And number two is, I'll use this language. If shit is the fan, you need a way to contact the world and to mitigate these effects. And the CERT is the best thing you can do. Thank you very much, and sorry for the language.
Thank you.
I do have a question. I think what's been interesting, I think particularly in Christine's talk, is the use of imagery. And I think, one of the NGO that I'm involved in, we do a lot of training. And I think a lot of time that the concepts, particularly end user training, organizations that do at internet cafes and those type of training, sometimes these concepts are too complex. And so, you know, that you've translated some of the material or your Uruguayan colleagues have, I think it's very nice. And I'd just like to know is if there are any efforts underway perhaps to pool this information so it's not only available to people in Brazil, but as it gets translated, so it could also be used by, for example, other stakeholders, because I know there are efforts by some nonprofits that work with human rights organizations and other and trying to put together materials. I think there might be some duplication of effort. And I think that if you've done a good effort and it actually has a good technical background because it's coming from CERTs, I'm just curious what outreach efforts Brazilian CERT may have done to approach the NGO community as it's the public as well. That's question number one. And number two, to what extent can your material, what type of license is it available? Is it a Creative Commons license? Is it a... because it would be nice to share that with other Spanish-speaking colleagues, not necessarily in Latin America, but maybe in Spain and other places as well.
Well, the material, the whole anti-spam website is Creative Commons. So, and the anti-spam website is actually made to be as freely as possible. We just don't want people to make changes and maybe change the meaning of what's written there. So the Creative Commons is you can use, you can reference, but you cannot make derivative work without talking to us first. Regarding translation of the videos specifically and the other material, ITU has approached us to translate it to the official languages in the ITU. So we are studying with them how to do that, but the idea is really any organization or CERTs that would like to translate that could talk to us on how to do actually translate the animation and translate everything. The copy and the DVD has subtitles in English. That was what we did now to approach a more international audience. But we have, for example, my CERT from Malaysia is approaching us to translate to their language. We have some other CERTs that are interested in translating too. So we are starting some talks about how to do that. And actually, This work of the videos, it started with the anti-spam task force of the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee that I am part. So CERTBR, we actually did the text and the technical content. Then we have actually the NGO members of the anti-spam task force were the one that drove the whole thing. So they are actually also supporting and giving that information and distributing into all the digital inclusion initiatives and something like that. So the idea is to be as broad as possible. If anyone would like to have that translated or to work with us on how to do a translated copy, they can talk to me or to any of the members of the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee that are here. So I don't know if that answers your... Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Christine. We've got one more question here. Richard.
Congratulations for the panel. Question. This question goes for to Gary. Well, you talk about the Estonian case as a case of cyber war, but could we also understand this as a possibility for people to express civil disobedience? Do you think this could be a valid way or form of expressing civil disobedience?
Okay. Honestly, again, I would really rather my presentation to be accepted on a technical level, and whether it's related to Estonia or not, and avoid any political statements. I can tell you, whether we like it or not, the internet is a political tool. The internet is being used for politics by political and non-political entities. And to be honest, Second Life has had riots on it. It has had political statements done on it. And as long as these... the problem the attack on Estonia had, that we all basically really rushed to help, is the denial of service attacks, massive attacks, not very smart attacks, hurt the internet. The internet is international infrastructure, and if this route goes down, it can affect you. So denial of service attacks are bad, and honestly, I don't really care who does them, whether it's terrorists or somebody who just doesn't, or somebody who is bored. I'll personally go after them if I can and stop them to maintain the internet and service. As to other types of protests, it's far for me to say, and honestly, this is a personal opinion, and let me put it this way. So far, the internet has been somewhat of the only function in anarchy. It is the only function in anarchy, and I would like to point out that it's a booster. Anybody can do anything they like. And as long as you do it and nobody else picks up on it and tries to stop you, I don't see why that would stop. As to if government will respond to this, I have no idea how this will end up. I have no idea, but okay, let me just say yes. That will be a better answer than keeping to talk about this when there are other questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gadi, and thank you for the questions. Because we are almost at the end of the session, we would like to wrap up and give the opportunity to our excellent panelists to make a short summary, 1 minute summary of the main issues raised. Please, Olga.
Okay, thank you, Veronica. Just one comment. The other day I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is a lawyer specialized in information society and informatics, and he told me something which I found interesting. He told me, Olga, there is no more cybercrime, there is crime. That it always, in a moment, involves some kind of part of digital information or digital proof. For developing countries, information technologies are a leapfrog for development, and security problems could be really a problem for our countries. So I encourage all of you that live in countries that don't have certs, that get in contact with other certs that are nearby and grab information from them, from South America, maybe Brazil or Argentina, or other parts of the world. They develop pretty interesting studies. I would like to mention a fantastic study about spam that the CERT from Brazil presented in the last GAC meeting in ICANN, which was, for me, was very impressive. And I requested that information because I found it extremely useful. Not for me, I immediately passed it to the CERT of Argentina. So it's a challenge for all developing countries. So that's my message for you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Olga. Christine?
I think one of the comments that I would like to sum up, we were talking a lot about incidents, and if you see at the end, most of our presentations, they talk about us trying to leverage what is already there. So we have certs established, we have net technical operators, we have FIRST, we have anti-phishing working group, we have mock fighting spam, and most of these people already have a network of contacts in other countries, and we can, as Gary said, quickly reach other people when we try to need help. So there is a lot of things that all countries can leverage, and they can approach members of these societies, or they can approach CERTs that they know.
to understand how it does it work, how it can help, or if it would be better for the countries to have another structure, or which structure, because every country has a little bit different structure. They're not all the same. The teams, the structure in the country is not all the same. So you can see what's out there, what the countries are implementing, adapt it to their own reality, and try to leverage that. So as Olga mentioned, the spam, if anyone would like to go to our website, there are some presentations about that. We did a study about the abuse of open proxies for sending spam and how they were doing that. We have some data mining on it. So the idea is really to get some more information, not only like vendors' information or information that you hear about that, but really to measure spam in the middle of the way and not the end of the way. So if anyone would like to talk about that, you can talk to me after. So thanks.
Okay, thank you, Christine. And Gadi?
I believe we all understand, or at least can, there is nothing much I believe I can add now about Estonia, which would make a significant difference in our understanding. What I would like to comment about is cybercrime and the internet itself. First, I would like to make a fool out of myself and just claim the internet is not safe. And I'm serious about that. The internet is not safe. It was not built safe. It was built as an open, shared, please come and hack me, a thing that just grew up out of proportions, and everybody uses it, and it's lovely, and it's great, that's good. The way, let's put it this way. Security governance of the internet today, although it has many stakeholders in it, basically the people who run it, the people who manage it, the people who govern the security of the internet are the people who choose to do so. Think about what I said, the people who choose to do so. Whether it's the bad guys or the criminals, by deciding that by the power of arms they can make us go away, and they did. They nearly brought down the internet a couple of times just to make a point. And on the other end, the people on the good side of the fence, let's call it this way, who make a difference and who govern the security of the internet are mostly volunteers. Meaning, they may have a security job, they may have a government job, they may be an antivirus, an ISP, the media, and once they are done, they do something extra. They coordinate global events on an unprecedented scale to make sure the internet is still here, fight cybercrime, and that the infrastructure, fraud, etc., everything is in order or taken care of. My one point to make is that we need to move from that. We need to move from goodwill-based relationships. We need to take it to the real world and to understand the technical people such as myself, although I've had, of course, worked for a government, etc., I have some other places I can go. But we need help from policymakers. We want to give information about what's going on to policymakers, because alone we cannot do this. Policymakers, on the other hand, need the information to make informed decisions. And honestly, right now, all these if I need to leave my niche, and I'll finish with that, this is the security niche. I don't care about it anymore. I'm now a bigger person, if I can be any bigger than I already am. And you know what? If billions of dollars in loss every year, sometimes when banks are attacked, it's up to several million dollars a day that are lost for each bank. If people lose their life work, the computer, fine, I'm okay with it. Don't quote it on it on the press, I'll be but I'm okay with it because the internet still functions. The root servers function on the one end, and people can access Google, MSN, Yahoo. You can check your email, everything is fine. All these millions of attacks, instability, the Russian mob, the Brazilian mob, Israeli, whoever it is that manages this, all these organized crime groups, information warfare, if all this goes on and it's just background noise, in my niche I'll be extremely concerned, I'll jump up and down and want to shout, but up there I'll be fine, as long as it remains background noise. But as to finish this, there is no cybercrime problem. This background noise is there, but there is no cybercrime problem, it doesn't exist. How can I just say that? How can I just contradict myself? The reason for that is, let's pick on the states, why not? If you write your senator or your congressman and you say, what about terrorism? No matter what side of the fence on how to deal with the problem, they would all agree, I believe, there is a terrorism problem, no matter the scale on how to deal with it. If you ask them about cybercrime, which is immense, which is a threat to every infrastructure in the world, they would say, what problem? We never heard about it. Or isn't that something the FBI is taking care of? So while awareness keeps dropping because we keep our efforts on the technical level, this background noise keeps increasing. And we need help of policymakers we need to move from goodwill-based relationships. We need to get more organized because cooperation is happening, incident response is happening. We need the help to make it bigger, better in the physical world. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gadi. With that, we will finish the session. I would like to thank on behalf of the organizers of the workshop to our excellent panelists, Olga, Christine, and Gadi, for the excellent presentations. And thank you very much for being with us this morning and wishing you all a wonderful day today. Thank you.